Do you hear me? Yes? Good morning. Before to start with my presentation, with my contribution, I wish to thank the organizers for such a nice conference and also for giving me the possibility to talk today. And in particular, today I wish to present you a three-dimensional hydrodynamic model that we have developed in Palermo, which describes the evolution of the supernova remnant Cassiopeia A from the immediate aftermath of the supernova explosion to its remnant expansion and the interaction with the surrounding medium. We have used this model to investigate how initial post-explosion anisotropies of ejecta may determine the final distribution of ejecta observed in Cass A. And these are the other people involved: Marco Miceli, Maria Lizia Pumo, and Fabrizio Bocchino. And this is the outline of my presentation. First of all, I will very briefly summarize the main properties of the Cass A morphology and the 3D distribution of ejecta that has been possible to infer from the analysis of the observations. Then I will discuss the rationale and the aims of our work, our methodological approach. I will present the model describing the post-explosion evolution of the supernova and the subsequent remnant expansion. And then I will describe the results of our modeling. Particularly, as I mentioned, we have analyzed how post-explosion anisotropies may determine the final distribution of ejecta in Cass A, and we have derived the properties of these post-explosion anisotropies responsible for the observed distribution of iron and silicon sulfur in Cass A. Finally, I will summarize the main conclusions and draw the main results and draw our conclusions. So a couple of years ago, we have started a project in Palermo aimed to link the morphological properties of the supernova remnants as observed today with the physical properties of the progenitor supernova and with the early interaction of the plus wave originating from the explosion with the surrounding, in general, inhomogeneous circumstellar medium. And we have selected two first test cases, study cases, two very popular objects, 87A and Cass A. Basically, because in some way these two objects are complementary, in the sense that in the case of 87A, the highly non-uniform distribution of material around the supernova is believed to play a crucial role in shaping the blast wave morphology. So in this case, the observations may encode information about the density distribution, the geometry of the material around 87A, so giving some insight about the final stages of evolution of the progenitor star. In the case of Cass A, the observations suggest that the blast wave is expanding through the wind of the red supergiant progenitor. So the highly non-uniform distribution of ejecta in this case is believed to originate from intrinsic properties of the supernova explosion. So Cass A can be a very attractive laboratory to bridge the gap between supernovae and supernova remnants. In addition, this remnant is one of the best studied. In this case, it was possible to reconstruct the 3D structure of the remnant, the 3D structure of the ejecta, in very good details, thanks to the accurate analysis of observations in different wavelength bands. And I show here as an example a movie from Milisavljevic and Fezzen, where you see the highly non-uniform distribution of iron-rich in blue and silicon-oxygen-rich in red. This distribution is characterized by three extended iron-rich regions, those in blue, and two silicon-rich jets, not evident in this movie, but in other movies produced by Milisavljevic and Fezzen. And also, it is interesting to note some rings, in general, encircling the iron-rich regions. And this is very interesting. So the aim of our work has been to study the ejecta dynamics from the immediate aftermath of the supernova explosion to their expansion in the supernova remnant with accurate model resolution and completeness. To this end, we have used jointly a model describing the post-explosion evolution of a supernova and the model describing the expansion of the supernova remnant with the following aims: to derive the physical parameters characterizing the progenitor supernova and the environment in which the blast wave is expanding, to investigate how fine ejecta structure formed during the remnant evolution and how the final remnant morphology reflects the characteristics of the initial post-explosion anisotropies, and finally to derive the total mass and kinetic energy of the post-explosion anisotropies responsible for the observed distribution of iron and silicon sulfur observed in Cass A. Why use a supernova model? Basically, this is needed to provide the initial condition for the supernova remnant model. And we have used, for the initial distribution of the ejecta, we have used a one-dimensional relativistic radiation hydrodynamics Lagrangian code, which is specifically tailored to simulate the main observables in core collapse supernovae, and these are the main characteristics of this code. And we follow the supernova evolution from the breakout of the shock of the shock wave at the stellar surface up to the so-called nebular stage. We have explored the space of parameters, trying to reduce as much as possible the computational cost. So we fixed the mass of the ejecta to four solar masses in agreement with some values reported in the literature, and the mass of nickel to 0.1 solar masses in agreement with Ericsson and collaborators. We explored different energies of the explosion and different radii of the progenitor star. So this model provides one-dimensional profiles of density, temperature, and velocity for the ejecta. Then we map these 1D simulations profiles in the 3D domain to simulate the expansion of the supernova remnant. This evolution is described by the 3D Hydro equations of conservation of mass, momentum, and energy. And the model includes the radiative losses from optically thin plasma, the back reaction of accelerated cosmic rays, adopting the approach suggested by Ferrand and collaborators in 2010. We estimate the deviations from equilibrium ionization, adopting the approach suggested by Vikram Dwarkadas and collaborators, and our simulations are hydro multi-species simulations with post-explosion isotopic composition of ejecta taken by Tilleman and collaborators. And I show here two examples for a main sequence, a progenitor star of 15 solar masses upper panel and 20 solar masses lower panel, because basically the mass of the main sequence progenitor of Cassay is believed to fall within this range of values. The initial condition starts a few days after the supernova explosion, and a major computational challenge was to cover, to capture the enormous range in spatial scales. Think that the initial remnant radius can be of the order of 20 astronomical units when the whole spatial domain extends six parsecs in the X, Y, and Z directions. We have exploited the adaptive mesh refinement capabilities of our code using 20 nested levels and reaching an effective resolution of 0.3 astronomical units, which guarantees to have at least 100 grid points per remnant radius during the whole evolution. And this is the equivalent uniform grid if we were not using adaptive mesh refinement. The model is implemented using the flash code that developed at the University of Chicago, and the numerical resources were made available thanks to a praise award in 2012. So, after the 1D profiles derived from the supernova model are mapped in 3D, in the 3D domain, we describe the post-explosion structure of the ejecta by small-scale clamping of material and larger-scale anisotropies. The small-scale clamping is given as in a previous work of our group, and large-scale anisotropies are overdense, are described as overdense spherical knots, described by four parameters: the initial distance of the knot from the remnant, from the center of the remnant, the radius and the density contrast and velocity contrast of the knot with respect to the average ejecta surrounding the knot. In this case, we explore the space of parameters for the large-scale anisotropies. These are the ranges of values that we have explored for these four parameters. And of course, these 3D simulations are extremely demanding from a computational point of view. The exploration of the parameter space can be prohibitive, and we have adopted the following strategy. As a first step, we have explored the simplest case of a spherically symmetric explosion. So no large-scale anisotropies are described, and we searched for the supernova parameters best reproducing at the same time the density of the shock at wind as inferred from the observations, the radii and velocities of the forward and reverse shocks at the current time, and this figure shows the evolution of the radii in the upper panel and velocities in the lower panel for the forward shock continuous lines and reverse shock dashed lines. The red crosses on the right are the values observed today. And all these models fit the observations and are all characterized by a mass of four solar masses and an explosion energy of 2.3 times 10 to 51 erg. They differ for the injection rate of particles for cosmic rays accelerations, and for cosmic rays acceleration, and for the density of the medium in which the blast wave is expanding. So to discriminate between them, we have also derived the fraction of explosion energy converted to cosmic rays. We compared the modeled values with those inferred from the observations, and we found that in the case of CASA, the injection rate of particles should be not larger than 10 to minus 4. The second step is to search for the knot parameters best reproducing at the same time the masses of shocked iron and silicon sulfur and the extension of the iron-rich region. So we investigated the effect of the anisotropies on the final distribution of ejecta. I show here an example of the distributions of iron-rich ejecta in blue and silicon sulfur in green for four cases with different parameters of the large-scale anisotropies. And these are the parameters fitting the three iron-rich regions and the two silicon-rich jets. So after that, we were able to produce a model describing the overall evolution of CASA. This is a move in the same fashion as Milisavljevic and Fezzen, showing the final distribution of iron-rich in blue and silicon-sulfur-rich in green ejecta. The red sphere marks the nominal position of the Weber shock. And we found that the post-explosion anisotropies, the initial pistons, reproducing the observed distribution and masses of iron and silicon sulfur are those with a total mass of 0.25 solar masses, corresponding to about 5% of the mass of the ejecta, and the kinetic energy 1.5 times 10 to 50 erg, corresponding to about 7% of the total energy of the explosion. We found that the initial pistons produce a special inversion of ejecta layers at the epoch of CASA, so leading in iron-rich regions to silicon-rich, silicon-sulfur-rich ejecta physically interior to the iron-rich ejecta. And also the same pistons are responsible for the development of rings around the iron-rich regions, and these rings form at the intersection of the Weber shock with the material accumulated around the pistons during the journey within the remnant. So our models support the idea that the bulk of asymmetries observed in CASA are intrinsic to the explosion, as is suggested by several authors from the analysis of observations. I think I have no time to discuss about this, because we derived also the distribution of emission measure versus the electron temperature and the ionization parameter, and we found a very nice agreement with the observations. But I skip this slide just to go to the special distribution of the CASA eject, of the unshocked ejecta in CASA. And this is again a movie showing the distribution of iron in blue and silicon sulfur in green. We found that the distribution of unshocked silicon sulfur is characterized by large cavities corresponding to the direction of propagation of the pistons. And maybe this probably may explain why the cavities observed in near infrared observations are physically connected to bright rings in the main shell. Our model predicts also that the structure of silicon sulfur is filled by low density unshocked iron, and we have estimated a total mass for the unshocked iron of 0.1 solar masses. So these are my conclusions. I presented a 3D model describing the evolution of CASA from the immediate aftermath of the supernova explosion to the current age. And we found that the observed average expansion rate and shock velocity can be well reproduced by model with this mass, four solar masses, and 2.3 times 10 to 51 erg of explosion energy. The post-explosion anisotropies can reproduce the observed distribution and masses of iron and silicon sulfur if they had initially a total mass corresponding to about 5% of the mass of the ejecta and 7% of the explosion energy. These pistons produce some features which are analogous to those observed in CASA, especially inversion of ejecta layers at the edge of CASA, especially in regions iron-rich regions, and also rings of silicon-sulfur-rich material around the iron-rich ejecta. And this is due to this forms at the intersection of the Weber shock with the material accumulated around the pistons. I want to conclude my talk. This is my last slide. With the future prospects, because as I mentioned, currently for our 3D supernova remnant model, we are adopting to calculate the initial condition a one-dimensional model describing the supernova evolution. Of course, it is highly desirable to couple our 3D model with a three-dimensional model describing the evolution of a core collapse supernova, as the simulations that Nopuango Atanarat shown this morning, and also there is a poster by Gabler. This is an example. Yes, I'm very short. This is an example of simulation derived by the group at Max Planck in Germany. This is a critical point because if you want to trace how features, anisotropies, developed during the supernova evolution may determine the final remnant morphology, may determine the final distribution of ejecta in supernova remnants. And this is my last point I want to address, we wish to address in the next future. Our model is hydrodynamic, so we didn't consider any magnetic field effect. We plan to include also the magnetic field. Of course, the magnetic field is not important for the overall evolution of the remnant, but it can be important to describe properly the evolution of the pistons traveling within the remnant. Because if the magnetic field is able to envelop these pistons during the travel, the magnetic field may limit the development of hydrodynamic instabilities developing at the border. And so these pistons can be preserved and longer living, and so something can be different in the simulation. So, sorry if I was too long. Thank you very much for your attention.
Interesting movies. Questions? Yes, over here. Right, this one over here. Do that one first.
Yeah, very, very interesting work. I remember you have done also a very nice work on 1006 when you were adding small blobs in the ejecta, and you saw that the contact is continued. You can approach the forward shock as long as you have.
Yes, like you mean the small-scale clamping, right? Are you talking about the small-scale clamping that we have in the simulations?
Yeah, so I mean... Yeah. I compare this to remnants, and I see that your approach is similar. It's just the ejecta that you add some anisotropies. Then why the final result is different? I mean, in 1006, you see a rather spherical...
Yes.
A remnant with just the contact discontinuity the approach the forward shock, while now we have a completely different situation. So,
yes.
What's the.
Because in 1006, we have the small scale clamping, which is basically, I mean, we have this clamping is prescribed as per cell density perturbation. And we used a power law distribution function with an index minus one. But you have this random density perturbation, which is a. In the whole remnant, and in this sense, you have locally some density contrast, but in general, I mean, the distribution of these clamps is spherically symmetric. Here, there is another ingredient which is fundamental because we are considering the small scale clamping as in 1006, but here we are adding larger scale anisotropies. These anisotropies. Have density contrasts, sides, which are in general larger than the small-scale clamping. In particular, we have explored the range of parameters that we found in the literature for the clamps forming during the early phases of supernova evolution. And so this is the main difference between 1006, our simulations about 1006 and this case. In this case, we first explored the what I called the simplest case of a spherical symmetric explosion, in which we included the clamping as we did in 1006, but without the larger scale anisotropies. In this case, we obtained something which is the simulations are very similar to those of 1006, because that's actually the clamping is in average spherically symmetric. And that those simulations were useful for us to derive the parameters, the mass of the ejecta, the explosion of the energy, the density of the wind in which the blast wave is expanding. So that was the first step. Then we put also the large-scale anisotropies, and we explored the effect of these anisotropies on the final remnant morphology, exploring the parameter space, reporting the literature, and so finding the best fit parameters, reproducing characteristics which are comparable to those of Cassay.
Thank you.
All right, we're a few minutes over, but we have one more question.
So thank you. Thank you very much for your very impressive talk. Thank you. And let me confirm what you did. So did you solve the ionization state of the heavy elements? If so, could you comment on the effect?
Yeah. Yes. Okay, for the deviations from equilibrium ionization, basically, these are 3D simulations, very demanding. So we have used two approaches. One is extremely expansive from the computational point of view, which is actually to include to follow the ionization stages of some selected elements. And we, in particular, we considered the carbon, oxygen, silicon, and sulfur. Of course, in this case, you have a lot of variables included there, because actually you have to follow the ionization, all the ionization states, and this is extremely demanding. So, for example, we cannot perform the simulations including also the iron. So we adopted the second approach, which is an approximate approach, but it is very effective, especially in the presence of 3D simulations. This approach was suggested by Vikram Dwarkadas, which is actually to calculate, to include a tracer in the simulations in which you store the time when the cell was shocked. Then, at a given time, you can calculate the interval of time from the shock. So you have this delta T, you know the density of the cell, and you calculate the maximum ionization age. So from the maximum ionization age, so we checked for a few elements that this approach is very, it's quite correct, it's a good approximation. But I mean, for our simulations, of course, we used the approximate approach, which is less demanding, but also effective.
All right, let's thank our speaker again.